That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah. The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to the Unpacked Roles podcast, supported by Blue Collar Street Food. Well, I'm here at Bearwood for part two of the interview with Mark Bone, and it's now time for the fan questions. Now, are you ready for these, Mark?
I'll try.
Hit them out. Right then, the first one from Jordan Cole. How, with EFL restrictions in place, are we able to afford Baba Rahman, especially as we had to wait for Puskas to leave in order to bring Saar in?
Okay, so with the EFL's restrictions, there's certain key things that are in place. So first of all, let's say we had to trim our overall expenditure from a certain level, X amount of millions down to this amount of millions. And that's what the squad had to be. The whole wage structure, every player, their wage combined had to go from that level down to that level. And while we were trying to get to that level, the situation happened that we understood it. Myself, Brian Stapler, the finance director of the club, we understood it as being, well, okay, as long as it gets to the end of the transfer window and you're below that level, then you're fine. But when we're building the squad and we get to that back end of that, it was a situation with Nabi Saar that we'd agreed everything with him, and he was in the process, let's say, of signing, of getting the deal done, and then in amongst that period, we get notified from the league that, well, his signing will put you above that level at that time. And we, you know, our reply basically was, well, yeah, we know we're going to be above that level, but by the time we get to the end of the window, players move on, whether it be a George Puskas or whoever, we'll then be below the level. But at that time, the George Puskas deal hadn't happened. So they came back to us very late and said, well, they were in the rights to do that, and just said, no, we can't accept it until you know, that's cleared. So now we've got a problem, you know. With good faith, we'd spoke to Nabi Saar, we'd agreed for him to come. But in fairness to Nabi, then he, you know, I'm whizzing through the story, if you like, he had to be patient while we tried to facilitate a situation where George Puskas moved on for the next season. And in fairness, George wanted to, you know, he saw his future away from the club. He wanted to go back to Italy if he could. But, you know, Nabi had to wait and see. And so that was on that situation. And then what you have is, amongst the other criteria we had, is we had to get the players that we brought in all on a certain wage level. An average wage level, so there was only a certain amount we could go to. So when I hinted, or when I said at the start at the interview, Paul, that, you know, a lot of favours, let's say, you know, people I'd known in the game for a long time, and, you know, ringing up sport directors, ringing up clubs and saying, listen, please, you know, can we take him? We can't pay anywhere near his wages, but if you can help on that side of things, then what we can do, we can give them a platform to play. We can, you know, give them, we think, good coaching. And I think, I'm trying to be a little bit guarded what I say, but, you know, not to give anything personal away, but with Baba, You know, he'd been at the club, he knew the club. Baba's got the World Cup coming up with Ghana. So there's a lot of things, let's say, from Chelsea's point of view, where they were thinking, well, OK, is he going to be playing regularly for us? Possibly not. We need him to be playing regular football. So he then goes to the World Cup and what can happen on the back of that. So the conversation goes back and forth, and ultimately us as a club, we are dependent on Chelsea, the club, looking at the whole package, the situation, saying, well, okay, we spoke to the player, he wants to come to you, we think it might be a good situation. So that's what we have. Barber is one of those players that you mentioned early on, but maybe in January things happen. If things happen in a different way, then Barber has the opportunity to go somewhere else. We know that. But, you know, it's, again, I'll go back to what I said before, it's something that we have to deal with there and then, bring him into the squad. We might have a kick back in January or at the end of the season from there.
Yeah. Now, next question then. Matt Williamson, is it still the case that Kia Jarchamps had no involvement in transfers this summer?
Oh, Kia didn't have anything involved in transfers. I said it before, and to make it absolutely clear, I've known Kia for 15 years. I think he took Mark Hughes and I to Manchester City, to Fulham. I consider him a friend of mine. He's certainly a friend and a confidant, let's say, of the owner. But he has nothing, you know. I'll speak to Kia perhaps, I don't know, once every couple of weeks. Football situations back and forth, but in terms of the actual personnel we brought into this club, Kia had no involvement.
Okay, let's clear that one up. Lewis Ansell, do you feel that the restrictions applied by the EFL are fair?
Are they fair? When you're working through them day to day, Paul, you're asking me now to wear my heart on my sleeve.
Yeah.
There's been numerous times when you think they're not fair, because you know it's tough, and you know everything we do, we have to go through them to get the agreement on things. So it's easy for me to say it's not fair, but then when you actually look at it from their side, and I must say from the other sides in the league, you know, over the last few years, I've looked at the situation and, you know, what a Reading spending or whatever, then, yeah, you have to, you know, listen, we haven't done things right. Everybody at the club sort of acknowledges that. And so we can moan, but you can't moan too loudly, because the people who who are listening to you moaning will turn around and say, well, what you got to moan about? You've broken the rules, you've done things wrong, you've got to take your medicine, and that's what we've had to do. And I must say, in fairness, you know, on a day-to-day basis, I'll speak with Sue when players are coming in, or we thought they're coming in, and this happened and that happened, and bless her, I think we've got the best secretary in the league in Sue Hewitt, and the hours and that she puts in, and she knows her job very, very well. And it's been stressful, but in fairness, the league they've been fine with us. They've been straight. If there's any, there's a couple of times, more than a couple of times, we've had to go on Zoom calls with them to get clarification on certain things. And they, I've got no complaints with the league in that respect. I think they've been honourable to us right through the process. I'd like to think that they've looked and thought, well, okay, Reading are trying to do things right now, maybe with a bit more diligence than we've done in the past. And so it's an understanding, and it's a relationship we've got with them that is improving. It's got better than it was, and we've still got to basically abide by them in the January window as well. But I'd like to think that they look at us and think, well, we're getting our house in order.
Yeah, totally. In relation to this, I think I know the answer to this one, but it'd be good to hear it from you. Are we at risk of another points deduction this season or not?
Well, yeah, most certainly. If we got the... I don't know about a points... Well, actually, to clarify that, because, yes, we are if we break the rules, but, like I've just said, I don't think we're given much opportunity to break the rules now, because the Football League are on top of everything. But we've still got to be, as I say, very careful in what we're doing with our expenditure at the club to show. I think they, to put it in a nutshell, the league want to see that, listen, Reading are being responsible with their money. You know, they're not just going willy-nilly on doing whatever they want to do. They're actually trying to get it structured and do the right things. But we've still got those guidelines, let's say, or more than guidelines, those rules above us that certainly will apply in January as well. And my understanding is, if everything goes fine then, that in the summer window they'll be relaxed and we'll be able to do what I would loosely say more being able to trade proper, you know, instead of just going cap in hand to people and asking for favours left, right and centre.
I'll ask a question as well. How do you feel about next summer? Because next summer you're going to be a completely open door. Let's just assume we're in the Championship.
Yeah. And let me say this, Paul. Again, speaking to Paul and to Brian Carey as well, as I mentioned earlier on, you sort of think, well, you know, let's get through this year, the next summer we might be able to do this and do that. But we'll probably, in terms of the numbers of the squad, as I described earlier on, we'll have a load of players leaving, so we'll still have to replace a load of players. And then possibly our job gets harder, because at least this summer, I myself have known, well, this is all we can do. So I'm speaking to players, players' agents, players' clubs. It's almost like, well, you know, we're a blank sheet of paper. We're really transparent. This, we can't do any more than what I'm offering you now, because these are the rules. Well, that changes next summer. If there's no rules, all of a sudden I'll have agents asking for a lot more money, players asking for a lot more money, clubs demanding more, I suppose. So there's all those problems as well. So it'll probably be a more difficult job than it was this summer. I think it'd probably be certainly more stressful, because what did take the stress away was, well, you know, the stress was thinking, well, we can't afford a certain player, but, you know, that was it. Next summer it'll be, well, maybe we can't afford it, but we're not going to pay this or not going to pay that. So, and it's the bartering that goes back and forth, especially with agents.
Yeah, agents. Yeah, brilliant people. Alex Shepherd asked about new contracts for new players we've got at the moment, like Mate and Zhao. Is it possible that we can do any groundwork, or is that not a viable option?
That's a good question, because there's no, you know, again, there's no point running away from it. We've got players here who are on the top end of the wage scale. The easiest answer to that would be, oh, well, you know, these players have, you know, they've got to move on and we can't be doing that anymore. But that's taking away the, let's say, the personal feelings of players, in terms of, you know, the players, they like playing here. If they like playing here, if they like the environment, if their family's settled, if their kids are in school, who knows, then they come to, you know, the renegotiation stage, then if they fit what the manager wants at the club, and I must say what the fans want, you know, you've got to take that into consideration as well, then you'll do your best to try and renegotiate a deal to keep them at the club. You know, notwithstanding, you know, they'll have opportunities to go elsewhere, if they're free agents especially. But I wouldn't rule out anything. We'll certainly see how the season goes. But it has to be, let's say, I mean this in terms of whether the manager at the club, Paul, is the player already? I guess you come in trying to put the thing in my mind, thinking out loud the time scale on it. You know, you're preparing for every game, but I guess it'll come to February, March, April next year, where the manager will be thinking about the next season and his squad and where does he go with things, and it'll generally be sitting down and say, well, you know, so-and-so, this player, that player, what do you think? Are you happy? Do you want to keep him? Are you happy to keep him? Or are you thinking, well, no, we can get better, or he doesn't fit into your style of play?
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car-selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Yeah, totally. Totally, it's the game that every single club in the league has to deal with. Every single year.
And you do, in fairness, that I think what the fans maybe don't realise is that work will, if it isn't going on now, it'll certainly, once you pass Christmas and even into the January window, we'll be touching base with players even then, that, you know, speaking to them, their agents, and, you know, you do make, it happens in football, perhaps not supposed to, but, you know, there's one way or another, you get messages through the players, would you like to come here, are you happy where you are, have we got a chance of bringing you there, all those things, and then you start compiling, you know, database lists of players in positions where you what you're looking for, what you want to do, and how you want to play.
Yeah, totally. Ed Reiling asks, once the embargo's over, will we be spending similar amounts of money from Mr. Dye per transfer window as we did in 2018-20, but spent better, perhaps split over more players?
Yeah, and again, I see that where the question's coming from. I think the best way to answer it is that you go and get the players that you want. Now, there might be, as I say, there might be the odd player that comes and you have a chance, maybe a chance of getting him, and he's above where you want to go in terms of paying. But if everybody, myself, Mr. Dye, Brian Carey, Paul Ince, if we're of the opinion, well, this could be a key player for us, then I'd like to think and hope that we'd try and pursue it the best way we can. We certainly wouldn't go into if it happens that we're out of the embargo, we certainly wouldn't go into the next summer window thinking, well, OK, the shackles are off, bring it on. Mr. Dye's a billionaire, let's go and do what we want. That can't be right. I think you've only got to look this year, you know, you look at some of the players we brought in, let's say on the shoestring this year, excuse me, I mean, the likes of Tyrese Fauna coming in, Mamadou Loom coming in, and us, you know, Sam Hutchinson coming in, there's a load of them I could mention, obviously, those just ones that come to mind to think, well, you know, if you do your work right and you're diligent in the way you prepare and you do your homework, then why can't you build a squad, you know, for the right cost in the right amount of money? Yes, maybe embellished with the odd one or two key players that you probably didn't want to pay that much for. I don't think that will ever go away, because any manager will come banging on your door saying, wow, I've just had a phone call from this agent, that agent, we can possibly get this player. And you want then to agree with your manager, say, okay, we'll try and do it. So going back to the question, I wouldn't say no, we wouldn't never do it, but we'll certainly have a more considered approach to what we're doing.
Yeah, totally. Great. Let's move on to the academy now. This is a topic which obviously we've lost Category 1 status. Mm-hmm. Obviously, that's something that's very special to a lot of fans and to the club as well. What are the plans there to get that status back as Category 1?
The plan, obviously, is to get it back as soon as possible. There's no doubt about it. I think it's something that the club can be and should be and are very proud of. You know, I mean, I think only one or two, maybe Sunderland or something, is a Category 1. So, but I will say on the back of that, it is, if you look at a club of this size, if you look at, let's just say, where we've been in terms of league position over the last few years, and it does, I've had people talk to me in the game and literally astounded that you think, well, wow, Reading are still pushing for Category 1. I said, well, yeah, it's important. It's really important. And you go back to blessing to Eamon Dolan and what he started off or tried to create here. And it's a legacy that we've inherited, or I've inherited, the clubs over the years has developed, and we're rightly proud of it. But I will say, again, laying my hand, you know, heart on my sleeve, it's a bloody hard process to keep trying to keep up with the big boys, you know. There's no doubt about it. Is it cost effective? You know, it shouldn't be genuinely a fan. I can sense any fan out there listening and thinking, well, I shouldn't mean about cost effective, but you know, it's a big our academy, all academies, Category 1s are, it's like a big juggernaut that's rolling along, and you're continually paying out and paying out and paying out what you have to do. And so I'm not saying any way, shape or form we should look twice at what we're doing and consider what we're doing in the future. But I'm just putting it out there for people to realise it's not just a simple thing that you say, yeah, we should be getting Category 1. It needs a lot of work day to day. And Michael Jilks and his team down there, I mean, honestly, the passion they show for what they're doing and what they're trying to achieve to keep up with all the big boys every time is admirable. But we'll try desperately, because we owe it to the parents, the players who are there in the academy now, to get that back as quickly as possible. And again, without going in probably too much detail on it, Paul, it was, you know, the fact that we lost it. You know, I came into this job and we had an audit going on, and then when we lose it, the natural thing to do is, from my point of view, as if you like, let's say in brackets, the leader of the club, is to sort of say, well, how did that happen and why did it happen, and start pointing fingers. And you almost, you have a human nature, you want to blame people. Or you know, we've lost it because of this or because of that. And having spent a lot of time looking at it, I think it was just a culmination of situations that happened. You know, the club, you know, money at the time being, you know, the league looking at how much money the club was spending, people within the club maybe not wanting to spend it because for different reasons. Positions probably needed filling in the academy to answer to the audit that weren't then, that Michael Jilks and wasn't allowed or given the remit to go and do. So people started crossing over different jobs and sharing jobs and not doing a bad job, but then the league come back, in a nutshell if you like, the Premier League come back and say, well, you know, you should be having, for example, a psychologist with the under 15 team. You haven't got one. We've told you about it in the past. Why haven't you got one? Right, black mark against you. And Michael saying, well, you know, we tried to get one in, but the right type of person couldn't get in at that time. And all those little things that happened. And we thought we'd, for want of a better phrase, got away with it because we showed them, you know, what we're going to be trying to do over this coming year now. But on a time level, they weren't prepared to accept that. And they just said, well, look, their words effectively were, well, we've warned you over last season, we're taking it away. But you'll come back in Category 1 if you prove to us over this year that you can do that, fulfil that remit, if you like. So I know I'm rabbiting on again, but the answer to the question is, yes, it's important. It is important to the club, but it is a big thing that it's not as simple as a lot of people think.
No, I can assume. I didn't think it would be at all for a second. It's incredibly complex, the amount of safeguarding and all these different situations that they have going on.
And rightly so, it has to be for the protection of the young players we've got here. But and I still generally, I haven't got the bottom. When I first came into the building and I realised that the support that the likes of Michael Jilks needed and the other guys in the academy needed, and I said to them, well, look, yes, of course I'll give you as much as possible, but please understand at the moment we've got to try and build a squad, you know, so the time I want to give to you, and they were fine. And now that's finished, we've built a squad, now I've got to try, even now as I'm talking to you, I've got to try and get across more and speak of, you know, where are we with things. And I haven't probably done as much as I should have yet, but it's certainly on the agenda, believe me.
You got a lot going on, Mark, a lot going on. On the kind of like basis of the young players, the final question here, Sean Mobsey asks, I'd like to know what is in place for the youth team to support players who don't make it. I'd love to see the club become a leader in prioritising young players' mental health.
Yeah, I think we've got people within the setup, obviously. We've got football operations managers, we've got aftercare, we've got player welfare. And I think we, without getting into too much detail, I think I'm happy enough in my mind, from what I, you know, the stories and what I talk to people down there, that the players who may be coming to the back end, the corners who are leaving, that we've got a backup situation where phone calls are made to other clubs and other setups to try and facilitate that situation with players. Because it is, I mean, it's amazing this business we're in, because it's, you know, it's always like it revolves around being a team game, you know, but yes, it's a team game, but it's very much every man for himself when you're a player, you know. And unfortunately, the weeks or 10, I'm going to say, I shouldn't say like the weak, but, and the strong, I was going to say the weeks don't and the strong survive, but it's not just about that. If I give you any player, you know, they'll come into a professional football club and they might have an enormous amount of ability. And that's got them so far to this level now. But then on top of that, it's the for all players, whether you're in the first team at Reading Football Club or you're the under-12s at the Reading Football Club, it's amazing, goes beneath the radar how much mental strength these players need, you know? Players who are, you know, 13, 14 years old and they want to go out with their friends, but they can't, or they're thinking they should be looking after themselves. They've got a game or training the next night. And it is, from a very, very early age, it's a career mentality that, and then they can abide by those things, and then it just gets to a stage, maybe they're 16, 17 years old, where the club they're at doesn't feel they're good enough to go on. And it's brutal. It's a brutal business, and I can't say anything. Words don't really make up for these young lads, and it'll be in the future, it'll be girls as well who don't make the grade. But you know, all you can say to them is, well, you know, you keep going and keep pushing on, and if you went there enough, I'm sure you can earn. The phrase I always use is, you can, if you went there enough and you've got a talent, you can earn a living out of the game.
Yeah, totally. There's lots of players that are being rejected, isn't there?
Yeah.
And have gone on to have amazing careers. I could give two examples of players who used to play for Arsenal, Steve Superwell and James Harper.
Exactly.
Did pretty well for us. So, yeah, thanks a lot, Mark. That has been absolutely fantastic to have a chat. I really appreciate you giving me my
pleasure.
Time. You're
my
a
pleasure.
Busy man. And,
no, but I've always got time. Listen, I think it's important. You know, you and I, before we started this, we had a brief conversation, and, you know, and I think it was sort of, I heard that the... You know, the rhetoric, if you like, before I came in about in terms of the club, the fans wanting more information, the club maybe drifting away from the fans or whatever, maybe because there wasn't a figurehead as such. So, you know, that was one of the top of my agenda, if you like, coming in, is to try and, like, sometimes I think even today fans might listen to this and wonder, oh, well, is he fudging it there, or is he, you know, is he saying the right things? And there are things, certain things in detail you want to be, you're guarded in what you say to the fans. But I do think it's important that the fans know that what we're trying to achieve here, maybe some of the mistakes we've made in the past, where we're trying to go, and try and give us all the support that they can. You know, and it'll be tough when you lose three games in a row, no doubt. And, you know, we're going to Bristol City now tomorrow. I don't know when this is going out, whether it's today or after the Bristol City game, but, you know, it's... We've all got to be, we're on a road this year, especially, and the future. To, number one, keep, like Paul Lynn says, keep this team in this league and grow and push on and get that phrase that I said to you earlier on. It's the key for me, is to try, and I would want Reading fans, if it's not immediately now, but certainly in the future, that if somebody asks you, would you support Reading, that you can feel proud to say it's Reading, because you think the comeback's going to be, oh, right, oh, that's a good club, isn't it? They're a good club, Reading, aren't they? You know? And even something as simple as that, I think fans hang on that, rather than maybe if they say it and wherever they're talking, they say, oh, Reading, what the hell's going on there? You know?
Yeah.
Just that little cliche there, you think to yourself, well, if we can create that in the foreseeable future, then we're doing okay.
Yeah, totally. I'm from Reading, and I'm feeling more optimistic about the club than I have for a long time.
Good.
That's all I can
good.
Ask for.
Good.
Thanks
appreciate
a lot,
it. Thanks, Paul. Thank you.